I'm Elaine Shannon.
I'm Dana Lloyd. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast where we inspire and empower you to connect more soulfully to yourself.
In this episode of Soul Sister Conversations, we speak with Aaron Law, the empowered farmer who feeds the minds, bodies, and souls of Maritimers and people worldwide. We talk about his calling to share stories and insights and the use of social media to chronicle day-to-day happenings on his farm and his life. This is another great conversation I think we've got in front of us, Dana.
Yes, I think one of the best things I like about podcasting is getting to know people that are in our community on a more personal level, because this is someone that I don't know or haven't been introduced to before. So why don't you introduce the listeners?
I'm going to introduce our guest today, or our third person in the conversation. So Aaron Law is a third generation egg farmer in rural New Brunswick who is feeding the minds, bodies, and souls of Maritimers and people worldwide. After an experience of helping to establish an egg farm in Eswatini, I probably butchered that name, formerly Swaziland, in 2016, he felt a calling to share stories, insight, and chronicling day-to-day happenings on his farm and his life. He calls himself an empowered farmer. Welcome, Aaron Law, to Soul Sister Conversations.
Thank you, Elaine.
Another soul brother added to the pack. They're always right. Very excited to be included in the community.
Awesome. I'm thankful to be here.
Why do you call yourself the empowered farmer?
Well, I came up with that handle a few years back, around 2016.
This is like a Twitter handle?
I guess I initially started to use that in my social media threads, and I didn't come up with that idea from an egoic state of mind. It was, I guess, it's just a great way to describe how I feel and what I do day to day.
And that is what?
I feel empowered in that I realize, I guess, I've never really tried to articulate it before.
Welcome to Soul Sister.
Yeah.
Where we go right down and into the
good
stuff.
To put it simply, I would say I realize when my ego is in control of my life.
Well, that's enlightening.
So when I say empowered, that's kind of the perspective I'm speaking from.
Because that's coming from the inside.
Yeah.
Are you empowering other people or yourself?
Both, I'd like to think.
Can you say more about that? Like, how? But from your own perspective, how do you see yourself as the empowered farmer?
Well, a lot of what I share in my social media channels isn't just what I do day to day in my farming business, but also, you know, in insight I've learned through hardships in life in general.
Mm. Yeah. And you're sharing what you your perspective on the world.
Exactly.
And I guess, why do you think your perspective on the world is, I would say, worth sharing, but why do you want to share your perspective?
To help other people. Simple. It's not a "hey, look at me" thing for me. It never has been. I view myself as having pretty introverted tendencies in all parts of my life, but I think maybe I'm kind of an enigma when I look inwardly on myself from that perspective, because at the same time, I still like to do what I'm doing on social media and do interviews like this.
So it's moving you out of your natural tendency.
Absolutely.
But when you're there, you feel comfortable?
Yeah.
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 And so this isn't the farming that your grandfather did. But you're doing it in a different way. Like you're sharing your perspective as a farmer, which is, you know, your grandfather wouldn't have been out probably.
And
sharing.
I was saying to Elaine, I said, I keep calling you the chicken farmer. She goes, for the God's sakes, don't call him the chicken farmer. He's the egg farmer.
There is a difference.
He also, we've met the chickens, right? Because I saw a recent post, you know, you showed what a nice healthy chicken looks like, right? You know, nice red.
I was talking about their anatomy. Yeah.
Their anatomy, yeah. But it's those eggs that are coming out the chickens.
So tell us about what your family does. What is your business?
Yep.
Why are you the egg farmer?
So as Elaine mentioned in the intro, I'm a third generation egg farmer. So my grandfather started the farm back in the late 30s, early 40s.
Is there a name to the farm? Do you operate under?
Yep. Yeah, Law's Horizon Egg Farm. We recently registered that as a trade name for the farm in the last 3 years, but traditionally our our legal entity name of the business is H. Law & Sons Limited. And okay. H would be Harry.
Sounds
my
very
grandfather.
Old New Brunswick. Yeah.
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 And so we produce, we have hens on our egg farm, and for the sole purpose of providing eggs for consumers across the Maritimes.
And how did your family get introduced to the egg? Were they immigrants? Were they people who were, came from a, obviously from a farming line and decided eggs were the thing?
Yeah, so my grandfather and my grandmother bought an existing farm property in, on the Belle Isle Bay back in...
Same location that you're in now?
Late 30s, early 40s. And so our farm was part of, you know, the Loyalist land grants back in the day.
Oh, really?
Loyalist land grants. Interesting.
Yeah. So when the Loyalists settled here, they were essentially given these large tracts of land in rural areas to farm, right? So our farm was a smaller portion of a much larger farm from an original land grant. And they started exploring all kinds of farming, vegetables, beef cattle. Then gradually got into poultry and sort of specialized in that over the years, my grandfather and my grandmother, because essentially that's what kept food on the table and paid the bills.
That must have been the moneymaker,
yeah. And it was very different back then. My grandfather, back in that time, would spend the winters in St. John in the winter port, as it's locally known, working the port.
He probably worked with my grandfather, who his brothers all worked the winter port.
Yep.
Right? They had summer jobs, and then they worked at the winter port. Oh, my gosh.
So in the summer, or sorry, at that time in the winter, my grandmother would be on the farm alone for the best part of the winter with the children and keeping things running.
Like she didn't have enough things to do. Let's run
the
farm.
Just leave her behind. And how many children was she raising in this farm by herself in the winter?
Four boys.
Four boys.
Yep. So lucky four boys that she could put out to work in the chicken coops, the farm. Yeah,
they all, you know, worked and lived on the farm for the younger part of their lives. And then, you know, when they became of young adults, they, you know, a lot of them found their own path.
Because it is quite rural where your farm is. Like, it's a road off a road off a road.
We're the better part of an hour's drive from anywhere, pretty much.
Okay, we really appreciate you coming to the
studio. It's stunning. Like, it is a classic New Brunswick, you know, beautiful vistas. But so, it would be brutal in the winter.
As the crow flies,
it's just over. It's just over. We look out Dana's window here.
So why did you stay in the business? As a third-generation farmer, you could have chosen all sorts of things.
Because that is not a traditional career path.
Well, I did. Yeah. I did, actually. It's something I didn't mention in what I provided you with the intro. So I left, you know, once I finished high school, I went off to college for 2 years in the Miramichi and worked in the environmental engineering world for 11 years in St. John. And then left that industry in 2010, came back to the farm because it was an opportunity at the time with the intention to go all in, you know, because I'd been away from the business for 11 plus years, so I wanted to relearn everything operationally, but then the soul part of it, I wanted to figure out if this is what I want to do for the next little while, buy the business from my parents essentially. So and I went into it with the intention to figure all that out in 1 year.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. Just put a nice timeline on it.
The universe loves timelines.
Yeah, and exactly. And that 1 year ended up being 3 years before I finally figured it out, like from a soul level.
Well,
operationally,
I say you're using the word from a soul level. So you were trying to figure out your life. You're trying to figure out if this is what should I do with my life? Those kinds of things were bubbling up.
It was really at a real turning point as far as career.
And how old would you have been at that time when you were having all that that crossroads?
I was 33. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty young to be at a crossroads.
Well, no, I find that's pretty typical. Yes. I find in the 30 to 35 range, we've done things maybe because we should do it or we're trying to pay the bills. And then I find people, because I've had that same sort of thing, we come to this crossroads where we're realizing the road's getting shorter. And even though it's still, you know,
I guess my crossroads was having kids when I think back to 33 to 35.
So if you're distracted or don't have something, you know, if there's something not calling you, because I went through the same thing, you have children. So that's a big distraction. So it takes you away from that bubbling up. And but then eventually it finds you again if you don't answer it. Mm-hmm. And obviously it found you and you made a decision to try to return to the farm. And you're the person who's running the farm now?
I am. I own it. My parents are still involved in sort of a semi-retired role. They actually live right on the farm. I live 400 meters down the road from the farm. And I've often remarked to my mother, the best part of where our house is I can't see the farm. Because for me personally...
because there's a disconnect. Right, you need that.
For me personally, boundary. I need yeah. that walk away at the end
sure.
of the day.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's not the case for every farmer, but it is for me. And I'm grateful to still have my parents involved and work with them because they're a tremendous source of knowledge and inspiration. And, all of the good parts about my personality, I like to think I can attribute to them in some
aren't
capacity.
You a good son?
Oh my gosh, that's
every parent's going, oh, my kid to talk about me like that.
But in farming, you create those close ties because you are working in a sometimes stressful environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You get to know people on a different level.
Yep. Yeah. And I work with my wife as well. She works in the farm.
Oh, okay.
And we have really complementary skills. You know, there's skills that I'm really strong at and lack, and she's really good at the ones that I'm lacking in.
You're a great team.
Yeah. Well, nice little leadership team you have there.
Yeah.
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 So what did you end up figuring out? Once you returned to the farm, you said at that soul level, mm-hmm. what was the realization, or when did you realize, I'm going to actually, this is my thing?
Yeah. So the story I've been telling myself during that 1 to 3 year wallowing
1 to 3 year
period was, you know, there'd just been this broken record, this story recurring in my mind that if I'm going to be a farmer, then that is it for the rest of my waking life that I'm going to have to do. And you're not going to have any freedom to do the other things that you like to do.
That's what you kind of limiting belief that you.
So you had to, because that's a pretty harsh and somebody who likes to travel like yourself, that would not be a good feeling to have.
Yeah. And you know, I
it was a belief.
It was a belief system that I hadn't shared, that I had picked up from, you know, the farming community
who
in
knows,
general,
right?
I think.
Yeah.
Because you know, most farmers I know may not necessarily see themselves doing something other than farming down the road.
It's so all in.
Yeah.
It's all in forever.
Yeah.
Like you're a lifer.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just, that's just not a perspective or a belief that I share.
Right. So you were rumbling with a belief during that 1 to 3 year time period.
It was a conflict, an inner conflict.
So how did you move through that conflict? How did you get rid of that limiting belief that, you know, I can be a farmer and still do other things in my life?
I just kind of had this come to Jesus moment, if you will, as my wife would refer to it, as just a turning point where I realized those stories that were recurring in my mind, those beliefs that weren't my own, and I simply realized the ability I had to craft and, you know, my business and my life so that I could do the other things that filled my cup, so
that you could actually create the life you wanted.
Yeah,
a life by design,
despite what
to some extent
farming
yeah.
has traditionally been, mm-hmm. because other people haven't, you know, considered doing other things. But you obviously have this yearning within you to do more than just farming,
yep.
which is where that word empowered. So it's not just an empowered farmer; mm-hmm. like you are an empowered human being. Because I think we all have a lot of beliefs that limit us on what we think we can do, right? Because you're here right now. Mm-hmm. You don't think you can ever do anything else.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And that's fine. You know, a lot of farmers just really, they can't see themselves doing anything else. And that's fine if that's...
Working for them?
If that's working for
right.
them. Absolutely. Yeah. I fully support that.
What are the other kinds of things that you were looking to do?
Yeah. So... you know, I openly admit to people, I'm not going to be an egg farmer for the next 20 to 40 years. I don't see that as a reality for me. It's not to say that I don't really enjoy and love what I'm doing. I do, but I just see myself doing other things beyond this at some point.
So there's a limit to...
When you're done, right?
Yeah.
So when you feel like that chapter's over, you're
like
going to be okay with...
Like I was done in the engineering world. You know, I was done with that.
Mm. Yeah, so next... And that, how do you frame that up? Do you think of it yourself as multi-passionate? Or just
multi-potential
someone
light. I love that word.
I'm not afraid to reinvent myself.
You're not afraid to reinvent yourself. That's
yeah.
really good. Because a lot of people are, right? They think that they're in this lane and they're going to disappoint other people, or they disappoint themselves or feel like a failure.
Yep.
And what do you attribute that too, that why you're not afraid to reinvent yourself. Did you get that from your parents, or did you just decide, adopt that belief, another belief, I can reinvent myself?
It's just something that feels inherent in my experience or my soul, I guess is the best way to articulate it.
So you don't have a lot of fears around that, about...
Not really.
Not that there should be.
As every
year... I shouldn't make you fearful.
As every year passes by, I give less shits about money... About money and what we were just talking about, reinventing yourself.
Returning to what matters,
Yeah.
And that's it's a slow peeling away, I find, right? And wisdom doesn't always come with age, but certainly if you're a reflective person, and obviously I can tell this in this few minutes of having this chat, that you know, you push the envelope on that. You're always thinking about what's next, trying to introduce people to social media about the kinds of things that you do and your passions.
Mm-hmm.
And being open too. You know, when you hear that calling has changed. So from engineering to farming.
Yep.
You heard the calling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then.
Yep. I ignored it for about a year.
Oh.
in the engineering world, I mean.
And so what was happening is you were ignoring it, because people are listening and going, oh, I think I'm feeling that right now. So what was going on when you were sort of ignoring the messages?
You know, I went into that industry and it was a great experience. The thing I really miss about that is the people and the relationships I made. You know, going from living in an urban environment to instantly rural. My wife and I struggle with that at times, especially in the winter, is a bit of social isolation where we live and in the nature of what we do day to day. And,
because you're entrepreneurs and,
it,
you know, it's an isolating experience when you're all focused on the business and you're out in a rural setting.
Mm-hmm. In a lovely, like, romantic, right. In a beautiful setting until the 5 feet of snow lands and nobody's driving up there.
It's interesting because, you know, both my wife and I have lived in urban areas. She was born and raised in an urban area. I wasn't, but I had that experience of living urban. And when you have that perspective and that comparison... we find it socially isolating at times, for sure.
But you found a way to use social media to your advantage, I think, for that, haven't you?
Yeah, but it still doesn't replace human connections.
It doesn't replace the human.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking maybe in the winter, like, we could get in the car, Dana, and go up and visit, have a coffee.
Sure.
Coffee and conversation with a farmer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and on that topic, because... I was reading an article that Elaine had sent me, and someone had referred to you like the Ann Landers farming.
Oh, yes.
Just go-to resource for farming.
I recall that.
It was talking about, you said a passion of yours is to help educate and entertain consumers. So why is that a passion?
I think it started from back in 2016 when I was in Africa. And, I became a media company almost from that experience of being there and sharing the experience. And it wasn't, again, like I mentioned before, it wasn't a, hey, look at me reason as to why I was doing it. It was just to bring awareness to what the good things that were going on in that particular project that I was helping with. And I just enjoyed sharing that information, and because I was getting fantastic feedback from those listeners and viewers from that experience.
Well, you're giving them a window into an area that we wouldn't normally get to see in Africa. So how did you get there? Like, what were you doing in that experience? Were you helping in an egg business? Is that what
it
was? Yeah,
so our industry nationwide, Egg Farmers of Canada, of which... I'm a part of. There's 1,000 egg farmers across Canada, as well as myself representing my farm. I was there on the ground with another farmer from Manitoba whom I know well. And our industry had been providing funding, expertise, and resources for this farm. It was started by two Canadians over 10 years ago. We're helping them learn how to... not only to build, but learn how to operate their own egg farm on this farm. And this farm supports, right now, over 200 orphan children in Eswatini.
So you're a real give back. And
empower,
there's the word again, empower other people to be able to feed their communities and how to do it well.
Yeah, because in that country, it has the highest incidence of HIV and AIDS in the world. 40% to 45%, I believe, percent of the population. Over 200,000 orphan children. This is in a country with a population roughly around 1 million. So big numbers, but a big effect that this project can have. And it was, we've all heard that expression, you know, teach a man, teach a person to fish.
Yes.
You know, that was kind of the guiding principle in my view of this project is to go in there and help these people learn how to nutritionally support themselves.
Right.
But it's beyond nutrition. It was, you know, we're helping with hope as well.
And giving them the processes and all of those things around farming so that it could be done probably more efficiently, and productively.
Yeah, we essentially, myself and Kurt, the farmer from Manitoba I mentioned, he was there for about a week, but I was fortunate enough to be there for a month. But we helped train the staff there how to operate this egg farm much like, you know, we would run our egg farms here in Canada.
Wow.
Obviously, this is different.
And do you check back with them how they're doing, or do you have any sort of updates?
I haven't talked to the folks there personally in quite a while, but our industry has maintains a relationship with them. And I was, myself and Kurt were only the first of probably almost a dozen Canadian egg farmers that sort of did a rotation during the initial 6 months to a year to help facilitate that learning process.
Mm. And how were you impacted by that process of going back over there and sharing your knowledge of what you know to help other people in a very destitute area?
Yeah, so that was the first time that I've traveled to a developing country. And I guess the biggest takeaway for me personally was perspective. It's given me perspective on life and what's important. Coming back here to a very developed,
very rich country,
very affluent country, which I'm grateful for. The thing that stands out to me, and I've referenced it on social media a number of times, like after that experience coming back here, and if I see somebody complaining about a pothole, I just can't relate to that kind of stuff anymore.
It's true that what matters when
you've
seen the kind of roads that they were traveling on.
And the life that they're living, like just everything when you go to developing countries.
It's so true.
And so did that lead you into more travel? Because you have a segment on your Facebook where you do Travel Tuesdays. Was that like the beginning of you going and traveling and seeing more of the world?
Not really. Travel has been something that's run through three generations of my family since my grandfather. It's always been something we've all enjoyed and pursued. And that wasn't really a starting point for me. I've been to a lot of places and experienced a lot of interesting things, especially in regards to outdoor adventure.
What does travel mean to you? So I take it you're not like going to Cuba with an all-inclusive package on the beach. It's not a getaway.
I like that once in a while. Yeah. But I have a hunger, if you will, for travel beyond that. Experiencing the people, the culture, putting myself in hardship. Some people may refer to that trip in Eswatini as a hardship.
Why would you go away for a month and live in conditions that are...
It was in the Southern Hemisphere, so yes. I went in December. That's in the middle of their summer. Hottest temperatures I've ever experienced, but remarkably comfortable, to be honest.
What kind of temperatures are we talking?
44 Celsius.
The
warmest I saw.
Is it humid or dry?
Very dry.
Dry. It's more desert in that.
You can handle a dry heat.
Close to the coast. It's only probably 1 to 200K inland from the southern Pacific, I guess.
But you say you put yourself in hardship. It sounds like you purposely placed yourself in that path. You're doing this to learn something about yourself? You're hoping to learn something about yourself?
Yeah. Not anything in particular.
I want to see what comes up.
I like exposing myself to hardship. Maybe it's kind of a stoic philosophy, but not only this experience, but I've done a number of mountaineering trips in the mountains.
Mm.
Nepal,
like which mountains?
Canada.
Oh, okay, Nepal.
And,
Nepal.
Yeah.
I haven't even climbed the mountains here in New Brunswick, and they probably hardly qualify as mountains.
So you went and did some high altitude climbing.
Yeah, back in 2013, my brother and his wife, three of us, we did a month long trek through the Mustang region in Nepal, which is sort of west of the Everest region. A little lesser known, less traveled area.
Sure.
Absolutely stunning scenery.
Wow.
And just really fascinating people, you know, because being there that long, traveling on foot for a month, you know, I think we covered well over 300 kilometers, maximum elevation, well over 20,000 feet, 6,000 meters, which you have to acclimatize to over quite a period.
Do you have to do any sort of training before you go to prepare yourself for those kinds of treks?
Good cardio is going to help you out for sure.
Because we're at sea level here, so how could you practice here for that sort of altitude?
It's difficult to practice for the altitude.
So the cardio, but
because you know, with maximal cardio health, your body is just that much more efficient with the oxygen exchange at higher altitude when there's less concentration of it. So
using your travel to put yourself in these hardships, those are kind of cool experiences. Mm-hmm. What did you ultimately walk away with in some of those experiences? What did you learn something about yourself that you didn't know before?
I guess, from that 2013 trip in Nepal, similar takeaways from that is just perspective.
Mm. Just dialed it in for you that you're so fortunate to live where we live and choose what you want to do.
When we were in Nepal, we flew into Kathmandu, spent I think a day or two there prior to departing on this trip for a month. It was guided, so we were supported. We weren't out there by ourselves. We stayed in a prominent chain hotel. I can't recall the name right now in Kathmandu, but I remember being on the rooftop restaurant that first night having dinner, and this hotel was an island of light in a sea of darkness. You know, there were consistent rolling blackouts throughout that entire city. That's just a part of life.
Oh, really?
And this hotel was like the only building with power in, you know, a really long, far radius that you could see. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to Kathmandu, but it's not like it is here.
But the rolling, I mean, so here, you know, we lose our power occasionally, and it's a bit of an inconvenience. But when it is a regular part of your life, you live differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the thing that really blew me away is, you know, from Eswatini and Nepal is, given these hardships, you know, the extravagances that they may not have that we have, like running water, for example.
Mm. And sanitation, probably.
And sanitation. Mm. Yes. And incredibly happy, grateful people.
Right.
Yeah. Like almost.
Did you notice that a lot? Like people were incredibly happy and grateful despite some of their conditions.
Exactly.
But they don't even know their conditions. That's the thing. They don't
have perspective.
They don't, right. Their perspective is this is our life, mm-hmm. but the simplicity of their life. So did you find that life was simpler, less chaotic?
It was. Yeah.
I find it fascinating that people say, you know, because I've heard other people say that about some of the happiest children in the world, and they just have like a little, some dirt and a stick and a little ball to play with. And we have here, like you said, people complain about potholes, mm-hmm. or maybe children complain they don't have enough stuff. And it is only when you have this much that with anything is taken away, mm-hmm. you feel like you've lost something, where these people didn't even begin with anything. You know, that I think it speaks a lot about happiness and gratitude and, you know, how it's not related to your stuff. And in fact, more stuff can make your life more complicated.
Mm-hmm. And so essentialism and minimalism, like really, they are living what people are writing about now here in North America. And we're attempting to get to. Mm-hmm. They're already living it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of having some aha's and thinking in my own head just about that, you know, about that peeling away, about how we have so much. And again, about that going inward to find your happiness. That's the only place that it's really, you can really find the true peace. And it's none of this stuff that actually makes it. And it's, in fact, it's being in union with people like yourself and having these rich conversations about our lives and learning from each other that brings me tremendous joy. Mm-hmm. And it's true. It doesn't matter, you know, what we have. It's who we are.
Who we are.
And so, recognizing who we are.
And how did that change your perspective coming back to Canada and all your stuff?
Get rid of anything?
Right. So that perspective of less is more and simplicity, like that's got to change you when you come home.
I've very much been a minimalist person, I guess I could describe myself, for as long as I can remember.
Oh, really?
So I was already sort of in that place mentally and physically with in regards to stuff. Stuff, oddly enough, does cause me some stress at times. And
do tell.
And being a farmer is an incredible responsibility because, you know, that is, I have an attachment to that business. And as long as I've, whenever you have live animals, you know, I am directly responsible for their well-being. If not me, physically, if I'm not there, someone else has to be.
Right.
And that's just...
They're like your little babies all the
that's
time.
That's just the way it is. And we take great pride and responsibility in that and in caring for the animals.
For those living beings.
Under our care, yeah.
Yeah. When you say when you were in is it Estuani?
East Swatini,
because I butchered that when I introduced you. East Swatini.
You were talking about you were sharing the stories, I guess, or covering, telling people what you were up to.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're attracted to the power of storytelling because you said you started like a little media company just by being sharing this out.
A one-person media company?
Yeah. What do you think the power is in storytelling? That or why are you attracted to storytelling?
I can't explain it. It just seems to come innate. Something that's, even given my introverted tendencies, it seems to come natural to me to share.
So that's so interesting that you're an introvert, you know, and you're quite soft-spoken.
And I've heard that before.
But you have a very common
and your personality
presence.
Is soft, like but you are gentle.
You,
yeah.
But that you want to communicate messages out to the world, that you want to educate people. Because what do you must get something from the connection then. Is it because you're an introvert? Or that you want to tell a story or you want people to know?
I just want to tell a story.
Mm.
It's not, like I mentioned earlier, it's not a hey, look at me thing.
No.
I just want to tell a story in hopes it might cause...
Affect someone?
Affect...
Empower.
But does yeah. And does it go back to in some families they're more storytellers than others? I come from a family of storytellers, and we can spin a yarn like no other, and we have great fun when we're together. So was your family, you know, back to your grandfather and your dad, like it, on the farm, were they spinning tales? Were they talking stories?
Yeah, I think so for sure. I mean, my mom and my dad both come from farming backgrounds. My mother came from a dairy farm upbringing. My father from eggs.
Perfect match.
So, yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how things work out for them and for us.
Yeah.
But did you hear, like when you were in the barn with your grandfather, was he telling you stories?
I was never in the barn with my grandfather because when I was old enough to be in the barns, basically he was sort of semi-retired. He had moved off the farm.
Yes.
So he lived in Sussex. So, he was kind of maybe where, you know, my father is in the business now. He's not operationally involved day to day. But I heard lots of stories about him in regards to the farm.
And you probably heard those through your dad.
Yeah, dad yeah. And staff that have worked with us for a number of years. Yeah.
So it is, I think the storytelling, because we go back to generations back, before cell phones, you know, and before lighting, like people would sit around a fire and they would tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is, it's an art. And if you grew up in a family that doesn't do that, like it's not natural, but you, even though you're introverted tendencies, you have that, you've had that experience in your life.
I think the power of storytelling is very profound because if you can tell a good story, and I think it's a simple story, right? It's because when you tell a story, it's creating that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And social media is pretty powerful, although we can never really tell exactly, you know, we're depending on the likes or shares.
Who's listening to our storytelling?
Who's actually listening to our stories? But I'm fascinated because you're in the food industry and there, you know, I don't say I'm obsessed with it, but I'm always trying to move toward eating healthier or knowing where your food comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like people are disconnected from the food source. Do you feel like that is true?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And how do you think or we got disconnected from our knowing where our food comes from? Or
the tendency for people to increasingly live in urban areas. It's very simple to
right.
me.
We've moved from rural to urban.
Because yep. we could see the farms if you're living in the country.
So how did that impact it, do you think, by moving into the city? Then we became convenience people or we...
Yeah, yeah. So right now, about 2% and under of the Canadian population are farmers.
Wow.
Back when my grandfather was started in the late 30s, early 40s, it would have been, I've seen the figures, but I'm pretty sure it's in the range of 30 to 40% of the population
in Canada. So we dropped to less than 2% of people in the farming industry.
Yeah, back then, if you weren't a farmer, you probably knew someone who was.
Right.
Now it's quite the opposite trend.
So you not only you're not farming, you don't even know a farmer, have never seen a farm in your lifetime, and so you think the food comes from the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking you're probably the first farmer I've met in a very long time. I can't actually, when I'm thinking of my experience, I, you know, been on elementary school trips with my children where we visit dairy farms and things, but to know someone who that's their profession, mm-hmm. this is how they make their living. You're right. I mean, that's not, they're not a dime a dozen anymore.
Yeah.
So how can we help bridge the gap between, you know, knowing, not knowing, and knowing where our food is coming from?
I guess what role are you playing in trying to Ann Landers?
Yeah. Oh, the Ann Landers of farming.
I know when I saw that remark, I was like, Ann Landers, I know that. And then I was like, okay.
She's in the newspaper.
It's an age thing, yeah.
I know the reference now. Yeah. Yeah.
And she's still, there's still, so it's Dear Abby, but there's always someone in the paper people are asking questions of.
Yeah, we're dating ourselves with the Ann Landers. Mm-hmm. But how do you see your role in making that connection for people?
Social media has been the biggest tool for me.
You say you started a media company essentially when you're in Africa, right?
To share that message. And I'm only doing it because people
want it.
Some people are interested to learn.
For sure.
Not everyone, but some people are. And there's increasingly, over the last number of years, there are more and more people that want to know more about their food and how it's produced and where and why.
Yeah.
And I'm here to help facilitate that process about how we do what we're doing on our farm.
Right. It's so interesting because I have children with allergies or peanut allergies. So I have been a label reader for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is makes you super aware of the dead food you're actually eating, like cracker boxes. You know, if you have a peanut allergy, you can pretty much avoid it if you don't eat boxed dead food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're eating vegetables and, you know, the dairy and the meat, you don't have to worry about
if
any warning labels.
If the food remembers where it came from, it's probably good.
You know,
like so I've said to my mother, there's probably more nutrition in the box sometimes than there is in the food in the box.
Well, I think they've done some studies on that. That the rats lasted longer eating the box than they did the food.
Exactly.
But so I've become very aware that, so I've been drawn toward that connection. And as you hear things, but as you probably, I think I might have read that in the article, that you can Google something and get lots of information. But like me as a consumer, I don't know what's true. What's a good study?
Exactly.
What, you know,
what isn't manipulated to for us to believe.
So are you a resource for beyond just eggs? Is like you're very well versed in the food industry? Is that what you feel?
I would describe myself as being very well versed in egg farming in Canada. I have a general knowledge of other parts of agriculture beyond that.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert by any means, but I have some pretty good connections and contacts where I can connect people that have questions that I can't answer.
Oh, great.
Well, because one of the things I was reading in that article was, you know, read there are no antibiotics in eggs in Canada. Now, so when I go to the grocery store and I'm looking at the difference between, you know, the $6 pack of organic eggs where the chicken has basically been playing fiddles or music in the fields, and then the other chicken, you know, the other options, I'm always balancing between money and does it really matter? But I'm thinking of things like, because people tell me they pump the animals full of antibiotics and they like you hear all these fear-mongering things. So can you clear up what we need to know about our eggs? What's the difference between the organic, grass-fed, I don't know.
Well, just pertaining to your question about antibiotics, really simply, egg farming in Canada, when you buy eggs at retail, they do not contain antibiotics or growth-stimulating hormones.
Hens haven't been injected with?
The hens have not been fed antibiotics or growth hormones.
In Canada.
That's not allowed.
It's not permitted by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency and Health Canada.
So then what's the difference between the eggs, I guess I understand free-range, or I don't know if that's organic or if that's one and the same,
mm-hmm.
and like, why are we buying organic, I guess? Like,
well, those,
or what's the difference? Yeah. Why do I care?
Well, those labels speak largely to, say, how the birds are housed or fed.
Okay.
Yeah. So in Canada, hens are housed in a number of different methods. The popular ones that you hear are enriched, which is what I have in my farm, enriched housing or furnished housing, as it's known, free run or organic,
right?
Free range. Those are.
And what's enriched housing look like?
Enriched.
And you say furnished?
Is this furnished? Like furniture. Furnished. Okay.
Yep. Okay. So tell us about that.
So what that is, we built this new barn 4 years ago. So we have all of our hens in one building. And so they're indoors all the time in a temperature controlled environment for obvious reasons because of where we live in Canada.
Right. Keep them warm.
Yeah. So they live in small colonies, small groups. They're white hens. They lay white eggs. And they have furnishings, as we refer to them, or amenities.
They have like a French provincial couch.
I refer.
They're smoking.
I refer to them as a lounge. So the hens have these amenities.
The chicken lounge.
Yeah, these because hens are just like wild birds. They naturally like to perch. So they have perches and they have a nest box or a nest area because chickens naturally. They're genetically predisposed to go lay their eggs in a quiet, dark place.
Okay. So you were giving them an environment which reflects their natural tendencies.
Exactly. What they want. They're not stressed out when they want to lay
eggs. Hens naturally are a flocking bird. They're social. They like to be near other hens. So that's why they're in small colonies of about 29 hens in our barn.
Okay.
And how many hens do you have in total?
Yeah, so we on our farm in one building, we've got, right now we've got about 36,000 hens.
Wow.
And
that's a lot of animals.
And
but when I say that, I like to give people some perspective.
Okay,
so
let's have a perspective.
The average egg farm in Canada has about 20 to 22,000 hens, so we're a little bit larger than average. The average egg farm in the USA is well north of a million, closer to 1.5 million hens per farm.
Wow.
So you can't even compare the egg farming in Canada to the USA. They operate at a completely different scale.
Mm.
And there's 1,000 egg farmers in Canada. Most of them, I believe 98% of them, are family owned. Again, for perspective, the entire egg farming industry in the USA, I believe, when I last checked, is owned by 10 companies.
Oh, wow.
So it is a corporation. It's a big business.
It's a very different scale than it is here in Canada.
Yeah. Holy smokes. So I know you give tours of your farm, correct? Because I've seen on your social media people with their hazmat unit on or whatever it is, right? To keep the contaminants. Nice selfie pictures. And you take people for tours.
Yeah. Yeah. So the hazmat, as you referred to it, it's not really that. But it's any guests... visitors to the farm, we have biosecurity protocols for
food safety.
Our hens.
Right. It's food safety.
And not just food safety, but it's primarily to protect our hens from outside disease.
Right.
Bravo. Yeah.
Because wild birds can carry avian diseases in their droppings that can affect domesticated chickens.
Okay.
So that's one.
So you do the tours, but very carefully.
Yep.
For the safety of your birds.
Exactly.
I love
and
that.
So our staff, myself. When we're in our barn with the hens on the farm, we have dedicated clothing and footwear that stays in that barn only.
So in and out. So you're dressing when you go in, and then you're taking that off when you go out.
And that's all to minimize the transmission of disease to our hens.
So you take good care of these birds. Because I know I read that you said sometimes they have better controlled nutrition than you do yourself.
they're
well fed and looked after.
I work with a team of nutritionists from a company that supplies us with some of our feeding ingredients out of Montreal. It's an international company. And, they have a lot more scientific expertise in regards to animal nutrition than I do, so that's why I work with them. The diet is very balanced. And the recipe, I'll say, because people can relate to that word, is built to give the hens everything nutritionally they need.
They need to grow it. Yep. What is the a life cycle of a hen? Like you have 36,000 hens. Do they do they live long lives or are they?
So on our farm and it's typical across the industry in Canada, they lay eggs in the hen house for a year, and the reason they don't lay longer is because the eggshell quality after that age, the eggshell will become thinner, is more susceptible to breaking or cracking. so that the yolk and the white quality is still optimal. It's just a, it's just a natural characteristic of domesticated hens. They, as they age, they're not as efficient at metabolizing calcium in their diet to form stronger shells.
So is that why when I'm trying to boil an egg and some of them are ridiculously hard to peel and some are, they just fall off like it's nothing. Does that have to do with it, or is that age of an egg, or?
That's age of an egg that influences how difficult it is to peel.
Okay.
So not, how long it's been on the shelf. Shelf life?
So the older an egg is, the easier it's going to be to peel if you're boiling it.
Okay.
Yeah.
The older it is, it's easier to peel.
Yeah.
That's so much. You know, I always had a question about this, and now they have a egg farmer. Mm-hmm. See, I got that in my head. Egg farmer, in my presence. So I think what they're always saying, you got to have the eggs refrigerated. I'm like, for heaven's sakes, the hens would like lay them at night. They'd lay there all night, sitting in the warmth, and people would eat them. Mm-hmm. Why do we have to refrigerate them? Or is there a optimal window that they need to?
Or are we doing it all wrong?
Or should we be just putting them in the cupboard?
That's a great question. I made a social media post yesterday just kind of referring to that. But I didn't get into why. So most of the rest of the world actually doesn't even wash their eggs or refrigerate them.
At all? Or they're eating them quickly? Is it like hen to breakfast plate? Like they're not storing them in the house?
No.
No.
Not necessarily.
They're storing them in a basket on the counter.
Somebody sold us a story that...
Well, North America is different. Canada, USA. I'm not aware of... I know there are other nations that wash and refrigerate their eggs, but I can't think of any the names that come to mind now. But right now, it's only Canada, US, to my knowledge.
Okay.
And the reason that has... the way it is primarily because of our climate. It is so variable, you know, between seasonal fluctuations. Mm-hmm. We refrigerate to maximize shelf life and to minimize effects from moving the eggs throughout the supply chain.
Okay, yes.
So they're refrigerated to maintain a constant temperature. If they're constantly going through the supply chain from cooled to non-cooled environments or because of the weather, it'll create condensation, which ultimately can lead to mold in the right conditions.
Mold on the outside of the egg?
On the outside.
So when we're buying our eggs.
Oh, so those times I've left my eggs on the cupboard and I'm like, dang it, and I've thrown them out, wasn't necessary.
Probably not. So just for example, and
that's interesting.
Dang it, Dana.
That's very interesting, because I feel like when I get eggs from the grocery store, I feel like that's the thing I got to rush into the fridge, that with the meat. That I'm realized, you know, well, wait a sec, the hens sit on those things all night and they lay there till the morning. What am I rushing for?
So in our industry in Canada and on our farm, the eggs are cooled gradually from the time they're laid to the time they get to the consumer. So the temperature in my barn where the hens are, you know, just like you would set the thermostat in your home, I set the thermostat in my barn to achieve an optimal temperature for the hens. So right now it's about 24 Celsius.
They like a nice balmy environment.
Cozy.
Cozy?
Yeah, I wouldn't say balmy.
Cozy.
They're not tropical,
are
they?
No. Yep.
And then,
but they like a little warmth.
And we collect the eggs every day. Then they're refrigerated between 10 and 13 Celsius. Then they're picked up by the grading company, of which I'm a shareholder, a part owner of, in Amherst, Nova Scotia. And then gradually through that process, the eggs are cooled down until they get to the grocery store where they're 4 to 6 Celsius.
So this is all for
fridge temperature, right?
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. Yeah. Well, I finally have my answer to that.
So keep them in the fridge, not keep them in the fridge when we buy them? Because they've already been cooled, right? So now I don't want to do anything bad to them by leaving them out.
Well, it is the condensation, right? Because I have had that, and you realize, that would get moldy unless you're going to go in there and shine every egg you've purchased.
Under the right conditions, mold can grow on the outside of the eggs if they're damp.
And how many eggs would get produced daily at your farm?
So we have about 36,000 hens, so... we get typically, you're never going to get 36,000 eggs because a hen doesn't lay an egg every day. It's on a 24 to 30 hour cycle. So we're getting 36,000 eggs a day.
Holy smokes.
Yep.
And so how many are you doing a month? Because I love this number.
Yeah, it's over a million a month.
A million.
Yep.
That's those are some happening eggs. There are hens. Holy smokes.
And so, and the, your eggs go throughout Atlantic Canada?
Yep, except Newfoundland, but all three maritime provinces. Yeah.
Would we recognize them in the store under a certain name, or are they remarketed, or once you sell them to somebody? Or?
That's difficult because we have lost our brand identity. I shouldn't say lost, but it's been eroded over the years because, you know, a large proportion of our eggs are packaged under private store brands. So like Our Compliments, you know, PC Blue Menu and such, or Shoppers. 9 times out of 10, those are our eggs.
Oh, I won't be passing over those anymore, but if that was a choice. Yeah.
But our eggs are branded and marketed under, when they're not under a private store brand, which they essentially require if we're going to provide eggs for them, Maritime Pride eggs brand.
Okay. Yeah, Maritime Pride. Those I do purchase.
Is that at Costco?
Yes, I think they are. Costco. In like the 18, I think.
Yeah. Isn't
it? We like those because we need a lot
30,
of eggs.
Yeah. 30 pack, yeah.
So those eggs are good to go. They're good to eat.
Well, because now we know the farmer, and hopefully soon I'll be able to see the farm. I think that would be a fun little field trip.
In January, when he's
January,
his wife
a soul sister field trip.
And it's not just me. Like with Maritime Pride, where I'm partnered with, as well as shareholders, probably 10 to 12 other farmers from the three provinces where we all supply.
So it all kind of goes into one place?
Yep.
Okay.
And the great thing about our industry in Canada is we're all playing by the same rules. We all produce to the same animal care standards and food safety programs as well, which we're audited on within our industry, and then third party as well. We're audited on a regular basis.
They all have the nice furnishings and the purchase.
Not all of them. Some of them have different housing systems.
They have
systems.
Different houses? Yep. Okay. But still to the level that the hens are going to be happy.
Yeah. There's an animal care program that we're all accountable to. And if we don't meet it, then we don't sell our eggs. Or we're not allowed to sell our eggs, basically.
I love being... I really... Like, these are stories where it makes me even happier to be living in Canada. Like, these are things in Atlantic Canada, right? That make our place special.
Well, I think it's the perspective. Yes, Aaron has said that, you know, that we have perspective. I think that's part of sharing stories like yours about, you know, growing as a person, growing as a farmer, and all these things that we learn, that there's a perspective to be had, and we realize how fortunate we are. And,
yes.
Yeah, and that our foods are, that we're provided are good quality foods, that we don't have to worry about that as a consumer going to the grocery store. Where's the future of farming going, do you think?
Farming in general?
Yeah.
I think...
Do you see that percentage of people getting into farming growing? Is there any interest in that, or is it less?
If it is going to grow, the percentage of the population in Canada that's in agriculture, it's going to grow minimally, in my view. I think we're going to see more small-scale farming operations, very automated, in urban areas. Mainly, not necessarily... In livestock raising, but more toward, you know, plant production.
Like hydroponic
vegetables.
Farming?
Yeah.
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 Because you can do that anywhere.
That's merely my belief and my speculation.
What do you make of the backyard chicken farmers or egg farmers?
People
raising their own.
And I was out for my walk in Rosse the other day. Not sure if this is legal, but I'm walking by this house. I'm like, oh, those are hens.
Yeah, a little rooster.
Pecking around this person's yard. And I'm like, well, that's cool. Yeah.
What do you make of that?
I think it's great.
Yeah. Getting really close to the food source when you're doing
yourself. That's
when you have live animals.
That's taking business away from farmers like me, but that's not how I view it. I view it as I like to see the fact that people are taking such an interest in their food to the point that they want to produce some of it themselves.
Right.
And I encourage that because... That's what I'm trying to do on social media. I'm trying to facilitate that connection, that education between the consumer and their food. So when I see someone with backyard hens, I don't see that as a loss to my business or my industry.
Not for the handful of
you see
eggs.
It as a gain for us as a human beings and getting back to our knowing our food.
Exactly. Yeah. It's maybe not necessarily getting back to the way things used to be, but it's...
It won't ever go back there,
But having more of an awareness how and where your food's produced.
It's nice to see that people are curious about that and willing to try their hand at it, because that's not easy to do, because, you know, it's like having a dog, or, you know, you can't leave those those animals unattended to go on vacation, like someone has to look after them. So there's a curiosity I think that people have about, you know, I think in a satisfaction as you must get from seeing food being produced. I mean, like I have some chard that grew in my little garden out here and I was excited to see it like double in size, you know. Yeah. Every day you run out
and it tastes so much better.
And it does. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we want to see the animals under our care thrive.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to us to do it any other way.
Yeah. How does farming fulfill your purpose? Have you thought about you've committed to this? How does that fill you up or give your life meaning?
I think for me, it's just providing people with healthy nourishment.
That is satisfaction, knowing that people are getting good quality food.
Yeah, that we're just our business philosophy, the way we do things is to do things with integrity and congruency.
And you care about that end result.
And we like to share what we do and why we do it. To those who want to know.
So how can people get in the know? Is it the Empowered Farmer on Facebook?
Yeah, so...
Is that mostly where you are?
Facebook and Instagram is where I'm most active in social media channels. I'm going to be branching into LinkedIn very soon. And
LinkedIn personally or as the company? LinkedIn's a funny playground.
Yeah, and I'm learning so much about it from Gary Vee.
Oh, I'm a big fan too.
That's how this started. Gary Vee.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Inspiration.
Yeah, he's influenced me for sure to some extent over the last year.
Yes.
But those are the primary channels, how I'm sharing, you know, through those social media channels.
And if people had a question about food or about egg farming, they would send it through Facebook, or is it a website that they would?
My website is currently down at the moment because
I did a domain. That
we weren't going to bring it up.
I had a domain registration issue that's been resolved, and I'm going to have it resolved within the next week or back up, I should say.
But Facebook would be a good place?
Exactly. Reach out to me on my social media channels, and I have a lot of people, not just in New Brunswick, but internationally, reach out to me with questions about
that's awesome.
Not just the farming, but, you know, other things regarding my life experience that I've shared.
Well, it makes that's the thing about social media and those videos that you do, Aaron. It makes you approachable because people feel your energy and the love of what you do and your, you know, how inspiring you are through those videos. So kudos to you for doing that, because when you are by nature an introvert, like, it takes that much more, I think, to put yourself
out there. Courage to share, right?
To put yourself out there. But people really are resonating with your wonderful energy.
I'm glad.
Yeah. Is there anything else we should know about the Empowered Farmer?
Nothing that comes to mind.
What's next for you? Anything on the horizon in terms of travel or
adventures?
Yeah.
Because it really isn't travel. It's more adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what motivates me in regards to the travel. It's adventure. I want to learn how to play an instrument and learn a new language this winter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Not necessarily master them, perfect them, but I want to start
and do that.
And that's
which
half
language
the battle
in particular?
Is starting, right?
Right.
The one that's it's calling all the to
starting.
You?
Spanish.
Spanish.
Yep.
So just as a tip, I know that our regional library carries, what is the language system?
Rosetta.
Mm-hmm. They carry Rosetta.
Okay.
It's there. So if you're a card-carrying library member, they can hook you up.
Good to know.
Which is probably, I think, one of the best language learning systems, I think, in the world.
Okay.
Yeah, other than getting out and speaking, but that's scary.
Well, you just have to book a trip to have a place
book
to practice
a trip,
it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Myself personally, and I've asked my wife to look into it, is, you know, if there's something offered through UNB or something, UNBSJ.
Yes.
Because my preference is to do something in person.
Yeah, the conversational stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And it gives me a reason to, you know, get away from
get
the country
the
and interact with some folks in town.
And what musical instrument?
Well, I have a guitar. I haven't
you have a guitar?
In years, but I find myself drawn more to piano.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
My wife has a similar interest as well.
Wow.
She, her mother is a very accomplished pianist, and she learned a bit in her youth and would like to explore it some more.
I'm sure there's somebody up in the Belisle area that teaches piano lessons.
Or maybe you guys will be it.
And you could be at a recital, because that's always fun.
Do you use this one here?
Yes, my son's the piano player. Okay. Yes, so he's quite a good piano player. So I quite enjoy when he comes home from university and I get a glass of wine, and he doesn't like when I give him requests, but I'm like, play something for your weary mama. And I love sitting and listening to it. So it's nice to see people take interest in music, because I think just again, it's all people that together. Connection.
Yeah, right? It is. And, it's a real connector.
Well, it's been fun connecting with you today.
Aaron, thank you so much for trekking all the way from cars.
Cars.
Coming off the
it's egg, cars, isn't it?
The egg farm, not the chicken farm.
Cars with a K.
Cars with a K. Look it up on the map, people, if you're not from New Brunswick.
Yeah. That's right.
Beautiful country.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thanks. You're welcome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm Dana Lloyd.
And I'm Elaine Shannon. You've been listening to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast. You can connect with Dana at danalloydleadership.com, and you can connect with Elaine at elaineshannon.com. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And join us for more Soul Sister Conversations. Thanks for listening.